The show is brought to you by Organifi. Organifi Green Juice promises to deliver all the healthy superfoods you need in just one drink. It's a green powder that promises to deliver endless energy, mental clarity, and fewer sugar cravings. As a loyal listener of this show, you'll receive 15% off your order. My personal favorite is their Sunrise to Sunset Bundle, as it includes three of the best sellers. Use my promo code WRESTLING15 to get 15% off your order today. That's Organifi. Shop.com. Organifi spelled O-R-G-A-N-I-F-I. Organifi, O-R-G-A-N-I-F-I. So go to OrganifiShop.com and order yours today.
Fox Sports 1340 AM presents to you WMER, Wrestling Marks of Excellence Radio, starring The Firm. J-Lo, Nephew, Corey, and Dr. D, bringing you the latest up-to-date information on professional wrestling and sports entertainment. Now, live from the Fox Sports 1340 studios in Hopewell, Virginia.
This call is being recorded.
Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. Always, I'm your host, Glenn Thomas. With me is the wizard himself, Nephew Corey. What's up going on, wizard?
Hey, what's going on? What's going on?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much. A couple weeks away from football officially starting. But we got a lot going on in the wrestling world. Almost one week away from a SummerSlam in the Barclays Center. If you watched this past Monday Night Raw, you saw that Paul Heyman put on one of the best promos that could ever be put on. Everybody's talking about it. If you hadn't seen it, go to YouTube, go to WWE Network or YouTube, wherever you can watch it and check it out. I think the promo was good. It tells the story of Roman. It tells the story of Brock Lesnar leading up to a Roman Reigns match at SummerSlam. And I think this match had to have some different things be added to it, a different dynamics to it. And I think what Paul Heyman in his promo was doing, even last week, we go back to last week where Brock Lesnar fired Paul Heyman and told Paul Heyman that he only wants his money. I think Paul is really doing some good things to enhance this storyline and make it interesting. Your thoughts on the Paul Heyman promo leading up to SummerSlam?
It further advances along the storyline and actually further makes it feel like, okay, is Paul Heyman going to end up turning on Brock Lesnar or what? It kind of makes you start asking those questions. So I like where that's going. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you on your toes. You never know where it's going to go. You know, I even thought about when I'm listening to it, like, man, Brock fired him. Do we even see Paul Heyman at SummerSlam? Which I think we do. He doesn't walk out with Brock. You know, I don't think he walks out with Brock. I think officially somewhere down the line he comes in with Brock. You know, but I think it does further enhance the story, makes it interesting for the SummerSlam card, which is shaping up to be a very good card. A lot of people don't like it because there's some rematches on the card. But I think the rematches that are on the card are definitely rematches that are necessary. I think the Dolph Ziggler-Seth Rollins match is necessary for what needs to take place with the Intercontinental Championship. I love the fact that Dolph has it right now, and we'll see where that goes with Seth Rollins. It brings opportunity, brings a lot of intrigue into it. Do we see a returning Dean Ambrose who may help Seth Rollins? People thought on Monday night that Dean Ambrose may return when Roman Reigns was told by Kurt Angle that he could not be in the main event. But we end up getting a handicap match anyway, Seth Rollins taking on Drew McIntyre. But they're laid into the fact that, you know, Dean Ambrose could return. Your thoughts, do you think we get a returning Dean Ambrose or SummerSlam?
Here's the thing. So, because of the show that we do, I'll go ahead and answer that. But honestly, I'd rather not think about it because I'd rather be surprised by it. I don't think he returns at SummerSlam, but I think maybe the next night or next coming weeks, I think he does. There's no point in putting him on SummerSlam. I'm kind of in that belief and kind of okay with WWE when they don't put people on a show returning on pay-per-view that much because it's pretty much, you know, there's no storyline for them on the show, so there's no reason for them to really be on the show. So I get that. I mean, if he returns to SummerSlam, okay, but we're not missing nothing if he doesn't.
Well, truth be told, I'm not missing him.
You know what? here's the thing. Okay, I'm going to disagree with you because, I mean, I'm not a big Dean Ambrose fan per se, but I do think I think his presence back on the show will help. I think so. I do. I know the show's going to always keep going for the most part, but I definitely can see him being an improvement to the roster.
If he's put in the right spot. I think he has to come back and I think he has to come back as a heel. He'll get that first initial pop as being, here's Dean Ambrose. But I think I think a heel turn for him will be best for the company per se. Someone he can feud with, especially if you keep somebody like Bobby Roode a face. I can see him and Dean Ambrose going at it. I think there just has to be some dance partners for people. Outside of the top tier, outside of your Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Finn Balor needs somebody that can be a heel. Look at the Raw roster. I think the Raw roster is heavily faced and not too many heels on that roster.
Interesting. Okay, I can see that point, man.
You know, and so you need one of those big heels because Miz is on SmackDown. He's a big heel on Raw. You got
Ziggler and McIntyre.
You got Ziggler and McIntyre. Finn Balor's in the middle. Kevin Owens.
No, are you kidding? Are you kidding me right now?
Finn Balor's not a heel.
That's what I'm saying. Finn Balor's not a heel. I thought you were saying heels on the roster. Oh, okay.
I'm saying Finn Balor's not a heel. You have Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens a heel, Gentleman Hall's a heel. And what other top tier heel do you have?
Oh yeah, well I mean you have Ziggler and McIntyre, you have mm-hmm. Lesnar, you have Kevin Owens, you have Gentleman Hall, you have who else is a heel? Well, if you think about it honestly. How many heels do you need up there? You have Mojo, who's not up there, but you have him as a credible heel.
Yeah, but I just look at it. If Dean Ambrose comes back, we're not throwing him in it. He's not going to be a mid-carder. You know, he's going to be one of those top-tier guys that we just named. And I'm just looking at a feud that he could have that could still be a top-level feud. That may not include the title. It may not include, you know, and like I said, Bobby Roode and Dean would be good. Or even a Seth and Dean again would be good. A Braun Strowman and Dean would be good. And I'm just looking at it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, which way can you bring Dean Ambrose back where there's a major impact without having to unify the Shield? Per se, and to give him a good maneuver push, you know. But we'll see. We'll see if it happens. Or not. Then we get the main event of Monday Night Raw for this past Monday night was Ronda Rousey taking on Alicia Fox. Knew this match wasn't gonna be a quick one. It was gonna be a quick one. And I like the fact they put her in the ring with Alicia Fox because Alicia Fox is a good hand. But Ronda still looked. Okay in the ring. Didn't take too many bumps. I don't think she took a bump at all, if I recall looking at the match. Maybe one or two. The one in the corner. But she came off looking strong. And I'm looking forward to the match between Ronda Rousey and Alexa Bliss. We'll give our predictions a little bit next week. Your thoughts on this match right here, Alicia Fox and Ronda Rousey. And do you think, you know, and shout out to Brian H. I'm breaking down with Brian H. Talk about there's too many promos leading up to Alicia Fox and Ronda Rousey. Do you think there's too many promos on Raw? And did
no.
You like this one?
No. It makes it a big deal. You still have to market the fact that it's Ronda's first match on Monday Night Raw. Anything for you to market something and make it a big deal, you take advantage of that. So absolutely, I don't think it was too many promos. And this is, you know, and shout out to throwing a bone to Alicia Fox. Because, I mean, she deserves it. She's been there 10 years and, you know, she got the main event Monday Night Raw. She's been loyal to the company. So, I mean, throw her that bone. You know, give her a video package hyping her. Why not? I mean, give her that due. I think it came off very well. I'm glad they picked her, a veteran, to be in there with Ronda Rousey, and they're saving, you know, they're kind of putting Ronda on these, you know, platforms to really let her kind of, you know, get her feet under her still so that she looks good at SummerSlam. And I think she'll look good at SummerSlam. So, yeah, so I'm okay with all of that that happened Monday.
I'm okay with that. I'm fine. I think, as we mentioned on last week's show, that Alicia Fox needed a bone. It shows that the company is behind Alicia Fox again after the whole WrestleMania fiasco, and she wasn't on TV for a while with Ronda Rousey's husband. What a good thing there. Good thing there. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about underrated tag teams tonight. Underrated tag teams that most people may have not forgotten about. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 1340 AM and 96.9 FM. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Looking for winning sports picks and predictions? Since 1971, Dog Sports has been recognized as one of the most trusted names in the sports handicapping industry. For the listeners of this very show, Dog Sports is giving out $60 worth of their premium member picks for free. These are the exact same premium member picks that 1,000 of their current members pay for. And guess what? You get them for free. Just text the word radio to the number 29022. Text radio to the number 29022 for instant access. Doc Sports also provides free picks on every single game. You want NBA picks? Simply Google search Doc's NBA picks. NHL picks? Google search Doc's NHL picks. Need MLB picks? Google search Doc's MLB picks. Remember to text the word radio to the number 29022 and start winning today with Doc Sports Service.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the Wrestling Marks of Excellence here on Fox Sports Radio 96.9 FM and 1340 AM. We're talking about tonight, we're talking about underrated tag teams in the world of professional wrestling, whether it's WWE, WCW, or whether it's ECW. You know, I thought about this a couple weeks ago when Nikolai Volkoff passed away, and his tag team partner was the Iron Sheik. And I think growing up in the 80s, this was, in my opinion, I was one of the better tag teams that was going on in the 80s. In the WWE, and I had to think, hey, let me give the Wizards a shot. Let's talk about some underrated tag teams. I think Nikolai Volkoff and Iron Sheik, when you talk about tag teams, are underrated by the fact that they were one of your dominant tag teams in the early 80s. And that you saw them on Rock and Wrestling. You know, you saw them on different things, and they were put as a good tag team in the WWE. Your thoughts on Nikolai and Iron Sheik as an underrated tag team?
I mean, yeah. I mean, they were a good heel team in the 80s. You got to figure there weren't too many. Not too many. I'll put it this way: the tag division wasn't really the focal point in the 80s. It was really Hogan. Like, that's it. There was no real emphasis on the Intercontinental Championship, you know, being kind of the workhorse title that it's come to be known as now. All the significant focus was on Hogan. So, I mean, they were definitely a good tag team, and they, they're underrated because they're not really talked about. But, I mean, in the era that they were in, it's not surprising.
Yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, I give you another one that I think is very underrated. I don't think we talk about the British Bulldogs as much. When we talk about tag teams, we always, everybody want to put the Rock and Roll Express. You go, they go to Rockers, they go Midnight Express, maybe even the Hart Foundation before they get to the British Bulldogs. But the British Bulldogs, even though they only won the WWF tag team titles one time, they were a very, in my opinion, very popular tag team and effective tag team in the WWF, excuse me.
Well, once again, it's the era. I mean, yes, they are underrated. I'm not taking that away. But it's the era, too. You got to remember that because the focus was so primarily on, you know, the boom and switch of how wrestling was done, to, you know, you had no real main event or star quality people in the tag team division. I mean, the only one of the major highlights of the of tag teams in the '80s is that Johnson and Atlas win the tag titles. You know, the first African American tag team to win the tag team championships.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, what are you really taking from the tag team division in the '80s? There's not really. What? Go ahead.
It was on every card. They built it up to be good. I mean, you look at the Hart Foundation was, you know, when they got the tag team titles, they was always building it up there. Hart Foundation versus the British Bulldogs. When the Rockers came, I just look at, you know, in other organizations, maybe not in WWE, the other organization had more focus on the tag team division. I mean, NWA, WCW, you had the Road Warriors at the time. You still had the Rocky Road Express in NWA. You still had the Midnight Express.
Look at the two places that you're naming. Because of where WWF was at that time, as compared to NWA, the focus on tag teams was totally different. The star quality in tag teams was totally different too. I mean, you had the Hearts, you had the Bulldogs, you had the Killer Bees, you had the Rougeaus, you had teams, but it wasn't, you know, like the NWA, like Ole and Arn and the Road Warriors and, you know, Koloff and Nikolai Volkov, not Nikolai Volkov, I'm sorry, Nikita Koloff. You know, and Ivan, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's totally different. The star quality is totally different in the NWA of what they had with tag teams than what you had with WWF. WWF, all of their eggs was in one basket. It was Hulk Hogan. That's what the focus was.
Okay. So, you doused in my 80s. My 80s thing. So I'm going to move it a little bit to where we go to the little bit
at you know here. No. There were underrated teams, absolutely. But I also want to factor in that looking at the time period of the 80s, that's when you can start to – this is my opinion because you're more well-versed on the 80s than I would be because you were able to see it in a lot different of an eye than I was. However, just based on studying it, I can see the trends in that where the focus was in the latter part, in the earlier parts of professional wrestling with the late 70s, the 80s, you know, you have your, you had Fuji and Saito, you know, as your tag team champions back then. That's a great team. You know, Will Albano leading so many tag teams to prominence, you know, in the U.S. Express with Rotundo and Wyndham. And you had tag teams, but it's never where the focus was, especially in WWF as opposed to the NWA. Because, the NWA's tag teams, my gosh, they were light years ahead of the WWE's tag teams at that point. But once WWE started to shift their focus and the way they presented sports wrestling, which turned into sports entertainment, the tag teams changed too. So you mentioning 80s tag teams is actually very important because you have to understand what was going on, and you pointing that out, you provide more of an insight as to the type of era that we were in. So absolutely, your 80s teams and you talking about the 80s is not discrediting at all.
And that's when a lot of tag teams were done. You mentioned the Rougeaus, you mentioned the American Express, you mentioned
Killer Bees, Strike Force, Can-Am Connection. Like, there were a lot of teams. Just because of the era we were in, these teams, they got worked, but they were so undercard. But there was never really major storylines that were really put into them like that. Cast the Hearts and Bulldogs, realistically.
And which is right. The Hearts and Bulldogs were I want to say, that's when the WWE title really, the tag team title, excuse me, started really to take shape or start getting that notoriety they needed to get. And always in NWA, you always had either the Road Warriors or the Rock and Roll Express, Midnight Express was in there in the mix when you having just having scaffold matches or marquee matches was built around those teams when you talk about in the 80s. You know, some pay-per-views were built around those tag teams. Even though you had Ric Flair on the card, some of those tag team matches were main event matches in house shows or on road shows. I think and you see WWE later on started to bite that a little bit when you brought teams in like the Powers of Pain, you know, Barbarian and Warlord, which was definitely a ripoff of the Legion of Doom. I mean, the Road Warriors. We saw that. Let's move on to another tag team that I thought was another tag team I thought was over underrated and don't get a lot of credit. Was Eminem.
Okay.
I thought Mercury and Nitro, along with Melina, when we talk about tag teams, you know, they don't get the much love as they should have during that time period when they were tag team champions.
I 100% agree.
These guys were revolutionary.
I 100% agree.
I mean, I think that, and catch me if I'm wrong, but fact check me. I believe they won a title 3 times.
I think they are 3-time tag champions. And what's interesting about Eminem is that they really shined, I think, in a time where if you almost look back at it now, it's almost a real dark period of tag teams in that mid-2000s because you really, I mean, looking at the crop of talent that you had in the tag teams, it doesn't exactly read a who's who if somebody was to look. You had Eminem, but you had a lot of makeshift teams. You had RVD and Mysterio. You had Mysterio and Eddie. You had Mysterio and Batista. You know, you had teams, but your actual tag team were London and Kendrick, Eminem, Basham, Deuce and Domino. Like the talent, you had talent there, absolutely. Not going to knock any of these guys, but other than Eminem, realistically, maybe London and Kendrick. Nobody really made a true dent as a true tag team. You have your obvious makeshifts, like I said, but not the true tag team.
But you also had, and get me wrong, wasn't Benjamin and Hoss still there at the time?
They had already been split up by then.
Yeah.
By the time of the mid 2000s, they were already split. They tried to put them back together, but both, especially Benjamin, had already kind of established themselves at that point as a breakout star, you know? So didn't really go too great.
And you mentioned, and that's what my point I was taking. In the era, during that time period in WWE, with the era where there was makeshift tag teams, let me use your word, makeshift tag teams, Eminem really stood out because they were true tag teams. You know what I'm saying? They were that tag team that really continued to blossom and work. They had a manager. And I always think tag teams with managers are legit tag teams, you know, because they are working with them and helping them win titles and helping them get over, and they're functioning well. Eminem, just to me, when people say tag team champions or WWE champions, I just don't think, you know, their name comes up in the conversation as much as it should. When you talk about some of the top tag team champions in WWE.
Fair enough. I get that.
It was a tag team. I'm going to go with one in WCW because I don't want nobody to say we WWE homers or I'm a WWE homer. Tag team that I know in my circle, I've always given them a lot of credit, but a lot of people don't. And that was Doom.
Oh yeah, I already know you. Yeah. here's my thing about Doom. This is not bad. I honestly think they were the staple tag team of WCW. They were the ones that no matter what you put people, everybody went through Doom. I'll put it that way. In the sense of, in order for you to reach that next level, or reach the highest level, you had to face Doom. or you had to work with them. Like, they're one of the greatest tag teams of all time. Honestly.
But nobody mentioned them. They don't talk about them. And then, I mean, I know they was together for 2 years. They had a 2 year run from 1989 to 1991. It was a 2 year run. But that 2 years, they was in the ring, as you mentioned, with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the ring with everybody. So when we talk, and I mean, I just think Doom, when we mention tag teams, they are totally underrated by the wrestling community, by those who call themselves aficionados of tag team wrestling or wrestling in general. Don't like to mention Doom.
Yeah, it's maybe it's because of the longevity. I would say it's the first thing that comes to mind. Because they really only had a 2 year run. But what a 2 year run it was to work with, you know, Road Warriors, Steiners, the Horsemen. I mean, they had a good run.
Yeah, they did have a good run. They had a good run, and you figure they went through two different managers, had women at the time, and then mm-hmm. they went to Teddy Long.
Yep, sure did.
Theodore Long, as they managed, and that when they really trained, they did away with the mask. Because remember, they started off with masks. They did away with the mask, and we realized that was Butch Reed and Ron Simmons who were doomed. And they had some good stories. Their storyline, they were relevant during that time in the late 80s and early 90s. So I just give Doom as being another underrated tag team.
Yeah.
That people don't talk about.
Well, I'll give you one that.
Okay.
I mean, when people do talk about, they still don't get enough credit. And honestly, I'm pretty sure, actually, they are my favorite tag team of all time. The Hollywood Blondes.
Ooh!
I mean, that's... And this one's different because they do get credit. But, however, I just feel like because they were cut away at the legs, you know, so prematurely, that they never got to live to the fullest potential of what that team could have been in WCW.
I'm gonna go with you on that. I'm gonna talk to you. I think it's the same thing with Doom. I think the longevity of them being tag team,
mm-hmm. yep,
is what cuts them to being underrated. They were good. Matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, somebody voted them tag team of the year. I want to say it was PWI, Wrestling Observer, PWI.
Yeah, no, they were tag team of the year. Mm-hmm.
Tag team of the year. In like 92 or 93, I think it's 93, they were tag team of the year. So, I mean, it just that it wasn't just as long, the longevity of the match.
Want what I don't want.
Yeah, the longevity of the matter, they just didn't, they wasn't together long enough.
Right. Right. And that sucks because, you know, as the urban legend, you know, kind of, you know, the rumor is kind of that Austin and Pillman were getting so over that they did everything so right that it hurt them. And as weird as that sounds, but that's ultimately what led to the breakup.
Yeah, they had chemistry. They had chemistry as a tag team. They had chemistry as being opponents against each other. Austin and Pillman just had that chemistry. And
absolutely.
I think that's what people didn't like about them. They took whatever Dusty Rhodes and the powers to be at WCW at the time gave them, and they made it great.
Yep. And they were Tag Team of the Year in 1993.
Okay.
Yep. They were.
Hey,
yeah. Yeah.
I think
I
think they were a good tag team. I think they could have competed with any tag team that was out there at that time. With the ring psychology had, the skill set they had at the time. And for those who listen, this wasn't a Stone Cold Steve Austin that you saw that was stumping mud hole in people. This was mm-hmm. Stone Cold prior to the Power Driver by Owen Hart. This Stone Cold could actually wrestle a little bit.
Yeah.
This is Stone Cold that was in the ring with Shane Douglas and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat on a regular basis and was putting in work with these guys. You know?
Ah, you mentioned my next team. That was my next team. Okay, finish up. I'll go into them when you finish up. That was my next team, though.
But I'm just saying, Austin was that Austin. People don't remember that Stone Cold where he actually was a ring technician. After being dropped on his neck by Owen Hart, he had to change his style. And,
yeah.
You know, Austin would do a lot of your technical stuff and will be an actually good wrestler. So go ahead into your Steamboat and Shane Douglas.
Yeah. Steamboat and Shane Douglas worked a great program with Austin and Pillman, as you alluded to, over the summer of, what was that, 93?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. They had really good chemistry together, especially, you know, putting still a young Shane Douglas under the wing of the Dragon, no pun intended, but I just thought that helped Ricky at the time, because Ricky kind of not stalemated, but he kind of didn't have anything at the moment, and it allowed Shane to actually be featured alongside with somebody credible. And I think that team, for a makeshift team, was really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, they were good. They won tag team titles, I believe, in WCW. Mm-hmm. They was on TV every week, you know, and they had good matches with the Blondes. And there, even though it was makeshift, Ricky Dragon Steamboat was doing some of his best wrestling at the time, teaching some of the younger guys in the ring and with tag team wrestling. Shane Douglas said in many interviews that Ricky had taught him a lot during the time they were together.
Yeah. And speaking of that, another team that, you know, kind of with the WCW teams, because they were really good at that time, especially the early and mid-90s, they were really, more so the late 80s, early 90s, they were really, really good. And especially Arn Anderson, who was as great as a tag team wrestler, he's just great, period, first of all. But one of the forgotten teams that was really good, there's two of them, and with Anderson. Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton.
Oh, yes.
And Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
I remember both of them.
Who he was tag champs with both of them. I mean, testament to Arn Anderson, but I mean, gosh, those teams during that time with Paulie Dangerously were—they even as a kid, I just thought they couldn't be beat because there was nobody like, you know, as many people. And as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, because people will remember Dustin Rhodes and Barry Windham together. But if I'm not mistaken, I think one of those times Anderson and Zbysko may have lost the title. Probably Anderson and Eaton, now that I'm thinking about it, was to Dustin Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat, I'm thinking. And maybe I'm mistaken on that, but I have to look that up. But I think they may have lost them one time to Rhodes and Steamboat. Am I right about that, or –
I'll have to check that out. I remember them having it, but I can't remember who they lost to. And we're going to check that out and get back for the end of the show.
For the end of the show, I'm looking right now, actually. I really think Dustin and Ricky Steamboat might have been tag champions. I have to look that up. Keep talking.
That whole Dangerous Alliance, and this is Paul E. with the big cell phone, Dangerous Alliance was good. Mm-hmm. And that's where Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton was at, part of the Dangerous Alliance with Paul E., which was a good tag team. And, you know, Arn Anderson has been tag team partners with a lot of people. You know, he is one of those guys that is a tag team specialist.
I was correct. Dustin Rhodes was tag team champions with Ricky Steamboat and with Barry Windham.
Hey, my man. That's why we call you the Wizard.
You know, yeah, I knew I had to think about it. I had to think about it. I was like, I really think he's been tagged. And that was an interesting time in WCW. And the reason why is because they had their own belt, and they still were using the NWA tag titles. Because I think one of Anderson's teams during that time, I think Bam Bam Gordy and Steve Williams, I think, at that time, were
WCW. I want to say they had the U.S. title. They had a U.S. Tag team titles.
I think they were WCW and NWA tag team champions as well.
Okay.
I really think so. Let me see. Yeah, and it's so funny if you're listening out there. These Google machines are great because you can easily look this stuff up.
Yeah, it needs to go back because, you know, we were both, you know, you and me a little bit older than you. You were much younger at the time. But that tag team I thought was good. While we're looking that up, I want to go back to the WWE real quick, tag team that everybody can remember that I thought was underrated real quick. And this guy, and when I say it, I think you're going to agree with me on this one. I thought the Smoking Guns were underrated tag team.
I definitely agree. That's a good one. Go ahead and talk about that because that's a good one. That's a really good
one. Especially the Smoking Guns with Sonny, to me, I thought they was over as a tag team. You know, Bart and Billy Gunn came in there, the way they would talk about them on camera, on Monday Night Raw, the way the feud they would have, the way they would win. Bart and Billy Gunn, their look in general, with the long coats, cowboys hat, jeans, and the boots, made them look like legitimate tag teams. The in-ring work was good for Bart and Billy. And just, you really believed them. And they got that slow burn as they went through the jobber tag teams and they worked their way up to becoming tag team champs, WWE tag team champions. I thought the Smoking Guns were good tag teams at the time. But when you talk about tag teams with Billy Gunn, we always remember the New Age Outlaws and never mention the Smoking Guns.
And so, let's pin that really quick because I did find it in Google machines. So, yeah, Terry Gordy and Steve Williams were the unified NWA and WCW tag champions. From them, it went to Windham and Rhodes. So I was right, Windham and Rhodes. Then, from there, it went to from Windham and Rhodes. It went to Steamboat and Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
From there, it went to the Hollywood Blondes, and then from there it went to Anderson and Roma, the Horsemen.
Yeah.
And I said that on purpose because Roma is a horseman, so.
that's a whole other show by itself.
Yeah, but at that time, that is the one that I remember this vividly, actually, too, even as a kid. At that point, they were the last ones that were both champions because when WCW officially split from the NWA, they took the titles with them, so. Anderson and Roma were no longer NWA tag champions.
Right.
So that's
I also want to mention this too, you know, when you was naming those off, this is also the time where WWE started to ramp up their tag team title, their tag team division.
Yeah. Yep. Yes, it was.
When we started having these makeshift tag teams in WCW, WWE was making up, WWE was transitioning.
Well, you got to figure. WWE at that time, WWE had at least, two or three NWA tag teams? Yeah, at that time, Headshrinkers, Steiners, LOD, maybe LOD had left by then, but around that time, you know, that was at least three NWA tag teams that they had.
Right. And they started to ramp up the tag team division there. You know, so Smoking Guns, I gave my view on them. Your thoughts on why you think the Smoking Guns were an underrated tag team?
Oh, I mean, I think it had to deal with their their size and reliability, and I guess the way they came off, I'd say reliability in a good way, because they were such a safe hand, you didn't have to do too much to try to get them over or get them or you know, kind of push them. They were always a safe hand that when in doubt, they were their complete tag team at that time. You could throw the tag titles on them because they were a legit tag team and they were your most complete team. Because Smoking Guns, I can't get that. I think they were, what, 3-time tag champions, which is a lot at that time. So
you could. I've always said
especially
it.
Especially for what? For what? That was what was them? A 2-year one? 3-year one? 3 years?
Yeah, because they were facing.
They split in 96, I think. They split in 96. So, yeah, it was about a 3-year one.
But wasn't a Brawl for All was kind of what killed them? Because that killed Bart's career.
No, Brawl for All was 2 years after they broke up, G. They broke up in 96 because Bart turned face and Sonny ended up siding with Billy, but Billy kind of went off on his own and then he started going with Honky Tonk and then broke away from Honky Tonk and then he got the New Age Outlaws. There's history right there, so.
There you go. Let's stay on the Cowboys theme, but I want to go out of WCW, want to go out of NWA, want to go out of WWF. This is a tag team that I liked, and I thought that it was good. It was America's Most Wanted.
You know what? So here's the thing about America's Most Wanted, before you even get into them. I still think of them, I still think they are probably the greatest TNA tag team that company's ever had.
Ooh, over beer money?
Yeah, because it was something about the time. How do I want to put it? AMW was working with more, was doing more with less. AMW was the best tag team in the world, arguably, at a time when TNA was barely on its feet, you know, pay-per-view or exposure-wise. Beer Money, as good as they were, there was more of a creative machine and a television outlet behind them. And what I mean by that is that, like I said, AMW was being regarded as the best tag team in the world, WWE or anywhere, and TNA was still doing weekly pay-per-views. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's where I think the separation is that AMW was that good back then that and for me, I think Beer Money also had the advantage of an established James Storm and an established Bobby Roode by that point. As good as that tag team was, they weren't two guys still trying to find their way. James Storm and Chris Harris at that time were not nobodies in a bad way, but they weren't on the scene long enough for people to know who they were. At that time, they were being regarded as arguably the best team in the world. So I'm always going to lend, and it's so funny, shout out to my boy Darius. He actually kind of the same thing in a way. I'm always going to lean toward, unless it's painstakingly obvious that the makeshift singles wrestlers together tag team can't be beat, I'm always going to lead in kind of dream match situations towards the tag team that's a tag team. I'm always going to lean towards that. Because if I'm not mistaken, I think he asked me, who did I think would win in a match with Edge and Christian versus AMW? And I said, I'm always going to lean that toward, I'm going to lean that towards AMW. Because I just think they were better. They were a complete tag team. As good as Edge and Christian were, I don't think they could beat AMW. I don't think so. I really, truly, in my heart, believe America's Most Wanted, was the best tag team in the world at that time. They just were.
Oh, they was over by all means. They were way.
And it's
over
not even a fact of them being over though, G. They were better.
That would have been a good match to see.
I don't think Edge and Christian would have been able to beat them at their height. Now, Dudley's at AMW, that would have been something different. But I just don't. Yeah. I honestly think at that time period that we had AMW, which is like maybe like 03 to 05 or 06, maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In that time period, they were the best tag team in the world, I think.
And no one talks about them as much.
And nobody talks about them.
They are very underrated. When we talk about tag teams, AMW, as you meant, they was one of the best tag teams in the world during that time period. In any company, any organization. And once again, they had the fan base behind them. So AMW, to me, my last one, and you may disagree, and a lot of people may disagree with me on this one. Sometimes I think Harlem Heat is underrated.
Hmm.
I don't think they get the much credit. I think Booker T gets credit. Don't get me wrong. Booker T gets credit. But when we talk about tag teams, very people that I've talked to put Harlem Heat into that conversation. And I think they're underrated as a tag team. Booker T, yes, is a Hall of Famer. But I think Harlem Heat should be, my God. I know WWE don't like putting tag teams in the Hall of Fame. But I think Harlem Heat should be a tag team.
Well, honestly, Booker's already in. And I know.
Oh, people, I know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I know people say, oh, you know, there's two people already in, and there's, you know. But, I mean, that's the only way. I mean, tag team, like, I'll put it this way. We wouldn't get Edge and Christian in as a tag team.
No.
We wouldn't.
You don't get the New Age. I don't think you get the New Age Outlaws in as a tag team. I think you get DX in as a tag team. I mean, as a unit.
Now, here's the thing. Here's my conundrum with that. I think DX deserves to get in as a tag. I think DX deserves to get in as a group, and I think New Age Outlaws deserve to get in as a tag team. I think both happen. I honestly think both happen. I think New Age Outlaws get in as a tag team. It depends. If DX goes in as a unit first, then the Outlaws won't get in as a tag team separately. But if the Outlaws eventually go in as a tag team, I could still see DX getting in as a unit.
DX getting in as a unit, I think Outlaws are going to be a push. And I like them. I think they should be, but I think they go in. I think they have to go in. Well, I don't have to. They should go in after your Midnight Express.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And I get all of that. But the Outlaws were the best tag team of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
I'll debate that with anybody.
They were the best tag team of the Attitude Era. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, not the Hardys, not the Dudleys, not Edge and Christian. Because it's them. It's the Outlaws. It's the Outlaws. The consistency of remaining a hot act, because they weren't just mid card. Like, they were borderline main event at that time. They were top guy at that time. They were very up there on the roster card. Like them, I really think those two are the greatest tag team of the Attitude Era.
Yeah, I give you that. The New Age Outlaw were the best team in the Attitude Era, tag team.
Yeah.
Hands down, they were the best
tag team. I don't even think there's a plausible, maybe Edge and Christian is the only argument you could make. But even then, I'm still choosing the New Age Outlaws over that. Like, they literally went from nothing to something. And I know Edge and Christian, in a way, did too, honestly. But I'm talking about, my goodness, Double J, Jesse James, and Rockabilly becoming as over as they were. Nah, that. Yeah, I got it. I'm just saying, I got
it. You didn't know?
Yeah, that.
You got a cold.
Yeah, that alone, that puts you over. And it's not like Road Dogg was just a silly catchphrase or something. They both could work. So, and that takes away from nobody else in the Attitude Era tag team wise. But I just think that, I think that puts them over everybody else.
Yeah, I think that put them over everybody else. All right, before we get out of here for this show, underrated tag team, one of your Mount Rushmore of tag teams. Before we get out, your Mount Rushmore of tag teams.
That's hard. I mean, I guess off the top of my head.
Yeah, just off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, Road Warriors, Dudleys, Brainbusters, Steiners.
Good Rushmore. I'm going to give you mine. Road Warriors, Kelly and Arn, Steiners. And this is where I struggle.
Don't say who I think. You know what? And people will argue this. And while you're thinking about it, in that fourth spot, I'm not putting the Hearts. I'm not putting the Bulldogs. I'm not actually, mostly all the WWF tag teams from the 80s, I'm not putting in that spot. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, other than maybe the Dudleys, if you want to count them as that, I pretty much named all NWA teams.
Yeah, see, and that's where I struggle, because I want to put the Dudleys on there, but then I say Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express, and I got to go with the Midnight Express to me.
Yeah, I would go. It's close, actually. You know, I can't even say that. Midnights and Rock and Roll are literally a toss up. You could put either one,
because you don't have one without the other, in my opinion.
Absolutely, the bingo.
You don't have one.
But with that said, that may hurt them as to why I named those other four teams over them.
Yeah.
Honestly. You know. Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's sad because it's like I want to put Harlem Heat up there too. You really want to put Harlem Heat up there. I really do. But it's something about the Steiners. Steiners would be the only one in question. If you were going to put a Harlem Heat up there, you're not putting Harlem Heat up there over the other three.
No, not three. That last spot is interchangeable, but you got the Steiners. I mean, if you put the Dudleys up there, you got to put the Steiners, because Dudleys broke the Steiners record of tag teams. Steiners were tag team champions everywhere they went, whether it was Japan, whether it's – you put the Steiners wherever they're at, they won tag teams.
Well, if you're going off of that right there, then that's why the four are some – I mean, other than – Tully and Arn were untouchable in the 80s, so period. So you're not – I don't think you take them off, but your other three teams, I mean, at least that I said, your Road Warriors, your Steiners, your Dudleys, all won titles everywhere they went, pretty much.
Yeah.
So
yeah, those three are a lock.
I think those three are the locks. I really okay. So then that's the case. If Tully and Arn are the quote unquote questionable ones, I don't think you put Harlem Heat in over them. I
don't think you put Harlem Heat over them, but you can take Kelly and Arn out and put Rock and Roll. You can take Kelly and Arn out and put Midnight Express, and I wouldn't argue with anybody.
I can hear that. I wouldn't, but I hear it, though.
I mean, I would argue with somebody if they just said Edge and Christian. If you said the Hardy Boys, I would have a discussion. And I would
Any team from the Attitude Era, as good as they were, I wouldn't put them on a Mount Rushmore. None of them. No, except the Dudleys. The Dudleys are the only one. But their resume is so head and shoulders above all the rest of those teams that you got to put them on there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to. They are when you say tag teams, the three we named are legitimate tag teams: Road Warriors, Dudleys, and Steiner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Those are legitimate tag teams that you name. And you know, I'm going to say this. If we look at it, none of those, when we say legit tag teams, none of those guys really went off on their own and became mega superstars. We, somebody say Scott Steiner, but Scott Steiner that became Scott Steiner later on wasn't the Scott Steiner that wrestled with the Steiner Brothers.
Very true. Very true.
But they were true tag team wrestlers, you know.
Absolutely. I can agree with that.
Hey, if you challenge us, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on social media, and give us your thoughts on who do you think were underrated tag teams, and what are your Mount Rushmore tag teams. Go with it. Take us home.
Hey, if you're not confirmed, consider yourself denied.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Catch you next week.